The three-year-old filly moved out over the healthy sage flat with the ancient unbroken rhythm of a well-built horse who was being ridden correctly. She had her head a little low for the man's liking, and she leaned on the bit occasional to the left, trying to test the limits of reins and such. But the man didn't sweat it. He hadn't ridden her in 8 or 10 days, so he cut her some slack. He brought her head back square with the rest. He used his spurs and his booted feet every time he did something with the reins. She was smooth and he wanted a dance partner like that. Every time she boggled around a big sage or skipped around a badger hole, she stayed balanced. She was a good horse. It had been raining good this spring and the sage flats were showing the promise of lots of graze come another few weeks. All that needed to happen was some warmer nights and sunshine during the day. It was no longer glove weather after 9 a.m., but it was still sweater weather. It was still neckerchief weather. And the man let himself get lost in the steady hoof fall of a strong horse going over the earth. He posted on the front right with the practiced ease of a person who had ridden not thousands of miles in their lifetime, but thousands of miles in a year. It was a motion that begat itself, the horse and rider in such unstrained and natural unison that both were comforted by it. The man's stirrups were long, and he was basically standing up on the horse's back. His custom saddle had never hurt a horse or him. Comfort matched only by durability. The man had to get the filly soft and had to get her to backing up, but that would come. Not today, though. Today she just needed to get out and get a sweat on and have somebody who loved horses and knew how to ride. She needed a kindred spirit on her back. So satisfied that she knew she'd been ridden, and knowing his day was long from over, he turned the good filly and trotted her homeward. She was content to walk or lope. She didn't try and push through his hands. She respected his feet. He allowed himself a slight grin as he pulled his saddle and brushed her off. Then he turned her out and went to find some fence to fix.
And that is Green Appaloosa, which is Devin Elves and Topher Dalrymple, who wrote that beautiful poem, right, Topher?
Yeah, I do all original material. I don't.
Yep. So have you ever been to one of those cowboy poetry events?
No, I don't have the right costume. I have not gone to one. I haven't.
You guys should bring this act on the road to one of those things. I think that it would be a good exposure.
That would be fun. There's one in Durango, the Durango Poetry Gathering, Cowboy Poetry Gathering. That'd
There's
be something.
There's one in
Rico. Uh-huh. Yeah,
be something to think about.
Sure. And just be like with your people. The cowboy poet is not, you know, not all cowboys are poets, right?
It's well, not. There's a difference between a cowboy that sings and a singing cowboy. I mean, you'd rather be a cowboy that sings than a singing cowboy. And the thing about the whole poetry tradition with the cowboys is when cowboys would travel across the plains and when they'd be just chuck wagon jumping trying to get from one spot to another, if they just stopped by, they were expected to tell stories or have songs or have poems that the people, you know, might not have heard. So you were expected to know a little bit, have a song or a poem or a story to tell when you got to the next campfire. And that's how the whole cowboy poetry singer-songwriter tradition actually started in this country.
Is it still going? Like, do you notice it when you're out in the world being a cowboy?
I do, because I'm a cowboy and a poet. I notice it every day.
Yeah.
And people will ask, you know. It's not information that I volunteer. But, yeah, it's a very private thing for me. So to get a chance to share it and get it out is a big deal for me. And it's, you know, it's nice to have a partner in this endeavor that understands the cadence and the and how things can go slow and how things are very improv,
right?
About the whole process. So for me, it's you know, I'm not going to get in front of a bunch of people with a vest and a scarf and a nice hat on, and I'm just not going to do it. It's just not me.
I've seen you do that before. What is does Devin try to get you to do that?
No. We have matching outfits. Yeah.
Do you? Nice.
Yeah, this is the same gotta thing see I wear that. To work.
Well, what are the origins of Green Appaloosa, and how did you guys come up with that name, which is fabulous, by the way?
Actually, this started when Devin was in a band called Ragged, and he had heard some of my poems, and he was like, why don't you get up and just do a couple poems and we'll jam with you in the background. And this was years ago.
Yeah.
And then there was a couple open mic nights, and he was there, and I was doing my poems, and I just said, hey, do you want to do the Dundle Deedles, which he hates that. I said, hey, do you want to do the Dundle Deedles in the background? And he's like, yeah, sure, I could do the Dundle Deedles. And then we were on our way to go cut a few songs up at Lee Willis's place in Olathe, and we were going past this old convenience store, and they had a huge fiberglass green Appaloosa horse in the parking lot, and we stopped and took some pictures and just decided to call. And it's easier to get, you know, it's easy to get bucked off of Green Appaloosa, and this all is off the cuff most of the time. We don't rehearse stuff that much.
Yeah, it's a lot of stream of thought playing.
Uh-huh. And Devin, you're also Willie Chicken. You have a whole nother project. Mm-hmm. And you put out a great CD this year. So
Thank
we'll
you.
Have to invite Willie Chicken back.
Yeah.
And do
yeah,
a talking music as that. Well. Are you guys going to play out anywhere?
That would be
I
fun.
I think that what we really want to do is make a record.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of get it out there through the interwebs and such. And just introduce it to people on different corners of the world, I think. Because I think we have something that's pretty good. And I think it has a big audience out there if it can reach them. So we really, I mean, this is our like fourth time playing.
Oh,
so wow. We're going to.
Well, you really do work well together, because I've heard you both separately with different projects, and it really does work
Thank
really
you.
Well. Yeah.
Thank you, Allie.
And right you're on. Playing your Dundle Deedles. You're doing this on
I
an
didn't
amazing
I know what that was
good,
at first,
guitar.
But now I get it.
He's a genius, see? He's got the hard job. I got the easy job. The man is a genius.
And that guitar, we were talking about it before you started, it's a pre-war 1930 National.
Yep.
And it's all metal,
mm-hmm.
and it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's kind of haunted, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It just makes an amazing sound. Tell the story about it.
Well, they just made these back in the day when they had the big band era, mm-hmm. and you couldn't plug in then, so they gave it a resonator cone, which kind of makes it project more. But then a lot of the blues guys, like a lot of listeners know this, like Buka White and Sun House and these guys, they played Nationals with the bottleneck blues style. And now you often, you know, whenever you hear a National, it's always somebody doing an old blues song, it seems. So I look at it as almost a whole different instrument. You play it a little differently than guitar. And it just has that magic, haunted tone.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe it does.
Mm-hmm.
It does. It's a great addition. It's like a trio. We have a trio just because that guitar is in it.
Yeah. I know. It has a personality, for sure.
Should we showcase that guitar?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Do you want to do We Have to Remember?
We Have to Remember.
That's the name of the song, or do you really have to take
no.
some time to remember?
A little bit of both.
So I wanted to find out a little bit about your creative process. You're basically saying that Topher writes his stuff. You guys just get together and you figure out how to
Yeah, he's the author and I'm the illustrator.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So it's not too complicated.
You know, he always tells me I have the hard part, and I feel the same way, because I'm really just kind of stream of thought, just playing, trying to make up a melody, really.
Right.
But the whole time I'm just listening to his words and trying to paint the landscape of the West. That's always what I think of when I'm playing with him, is the landscape.
Yeah, it's very, like, environmental focused. Like, I always think of the people who are spending so much time out on the land with animals and that landscape. They're the, like, they're the real environmentalists.
Well, that's right. I mean, every day is Earth Day when you're a cowboy. we don't need one day. We got 365 days to be Earth people.
Right.
And the connection to the land and you know, horses and cows and, you know, just dealing with life and death situations, you know, and pulling calves and living that lifestyle, just it's something that this country needs to go back to and remember.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in this day and age when everything's so hurried and so, you know, based on where's my phone.
Boxed in.
So and that's what I love about this project, is because it takes time. And we take the time to let it. And Devin tells me a lot, slow down, bro, just slow down.
Mm.
So that's what we try and do.
And yeah. Yeah, I think of it when you're dry. I just drove up to Redlands to meet Topher today, and you look at the clouds and the landscape, and they're not rushing. You know, it's just
right.
Expansive and open, and that's kind of what I try to make the music sound like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Well, let's hear another one.
An
old-timer told me one time, we're in a hurry, so we better take it nice and slow. We have to remember that all of this is taking place while the soundtrack of nature, the sounds of this life, are constant. At night there is the crackling of pine in the big Vogelzang stove that sits firm and reliable in the corner of the cabin shed. The pine makes its own noise as it succumbs for the last time to the muscle and will of men. There is the sound of the heifers chewing their cud and grunting, heavy with calf, their warm, earthly breath puffing into the cold Montana sky. In the supply room, the room for now, tack and medicine are kept, there is the hum of an electric space heater. A heater that the man will become exasperated with and unplug with a motion that would make Bruce Lee proud. At night, there is the hoot of an owl that lives sometimes in the big metal three-sided storage shed. And the man sees him sometimes and hears him others, but never both. At dawn, when the man slides open the cabin barn doors, the birds come in. One of each kind, maybe five different birds. And they perch and cackle and moo at each other like old friends at a cafe planning their day. One of them makes a sound exactly like a cow elk. The man doesn't know which one. In the morning also is the talking of the sandhill cranes, their water and metal-like calls coming from hundreds of feet up above or right down in the willers along Trail Creek. Again, the man doesn't know. He smiles because they exist and they call for springtime, and this makes him glad. Periodically, mostly when it's dark, there is the all-too-familiar sound, the overlapping yapping of coyotes. And when they sound too excited, and too happy and too close. The man drives out in his little ranch truck with a rifle handy. But he never sees them. And he is wont to know if they, like true love, do really exist.
Oh, that was a good one. What's that one called again?
We have to remember. And you got to say it like that.
Right, and I have to remember that. Wow, okay, so that's Green Appaloosa, Topher Dalrymple, and Devin Alves on guitar there. I just, I saw in one of your guitar cases, you had a bumper sticker that said, I don't need religion, I cowboy. Is that yours?
I had those custom made, yeah.
Yeah.
He just put that on my case a couple hours ago.
Really?
Yeah.
There's like four fridges in Paonia that have that on the fridge. All the houses.
It's a very limited edition.
Yeah, I had those made.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool. It is kind of your religion, huh?
It is. It's a cultural thing. And I think it definitely is. It is a religious thing for me. When I get out and I get sober and I get alone but not lonely, and I get physically active, and happiness is the side effect of doing what you want to do in this life. Don't make any mistake. Don't ever just try and be happy. Okay? Don't make no sense.
Wait till you find that thing that actually produces
do
it.
Do that thing that makes happiness become a side effect of what you do. And and every morning when the sun comes up, you will be thankful. And that's where it's all at for me. Horses and cows and God's green earth, you know. And that's where it's at. So
I know you really love horses, like almost as much as I love cats. But you do. You have a special relationship with them. It seems like you really study them and understand them and build these relationships with them. What was your? Can you tell me how you got started with that? Like who was your first horse?
Well, I can't really remember my first horse. The reason why I have such affinity for horses is because I was around them some when I was younger and rode a little bit and then went away from that. And my brother actually got run over by a car and killed when I was 18 years old. And for like 4 years, I ran around. I didn't know what to do. I was just drinking all the time. And my dad said, you need to find something that takes you to that place that you were happy in before Tim died. And I started riding again, and I went to horse packing school with the National Outdoor Leadership School and ended up working for them for like four years, and worked for Knowles, and I was in my young 20s and just got back into it and went to horseshoeing school, and then I went to hoof biomechanics school, and I went to horse massage school, and I went to, you know, school hard knocks, and just drifted all over the place. And horses will hold up a mirror for you to look into if you don't have any courage or tolerance or compassion or bravery. That's what you get back from the horses. Like, they will only give to you what you bring to the table. So you can't be... You can't hide and you can't be chicken. Like, they're like, oh, this is you. So, and they'll see through you. So don't, you know, when you're around them, you can't put up a face. And that's what I like about horses. It's just, they're so bloody honest, you know.
Very nice.
Well, speaking of horses, should we do Tuck?
Should we do Tuck? This guy.
Right. Who is Tuck?
Tuck was a horse they gave me up in Montana who was just an amazing critter that he had been ridden wrong for a long time. And he had really tight shoulders and he had wrinkles under his eyes and he had his ears pinned back all the time. And he had been what we call slammed and jammed on for a number of years by a few different riders. And when I got to him, I just started riding him and handling him completely different. he didn't even know how to slow lope without just taking off at a dead run. He didn't do anything relaxed. And I started riding him and gave him some horse massage to loosen his neck and his shoulders up, and kind of integrated him that way, and just started riding him different. And by the time I left, you could slow lope him, and he'd drop his head, and he was having a lot better time. He had his ears up, and his eyes changed, and so that's kind of why we do it, you know? Like, if you just, you know, if I went up there for 3 months and I helped one horse while I was up there, then that makes the whole trip worthwhile, man. I really don't care about anything else. I really don't. So this poem is dedicated to Tuck. Tuck was laying down with his stout legs under him, looking content with life in general. The man stopped his slow walk maybe 50 feet from the horse, and the sun was good, and the man felt its warmth in his strangely thick shoulders, his long corded arms. It was like a heater against the smooth brown leather of his shaps. He stood relaxed and happy, looking at the good horse, the halter resting in the crook of his left arm. The horse watched him with intelligent brown eyes and slowly stood up. "Come on, boss, we got stuff to do." The horse walked to the man and put its head in his chest, and the man rubbed him about the ears and eyes, and he stroked his neck briefly. Then he put the halter on him respectfully, and they went to work. And once at work, they tried and were successful at getting the job done. They moved some heifers back to where they belonged with the cow boss and two of his good, if not overly fresh, springtime dogs. They doctored a heifer and rode all three bunches of pairs, and they handed out scour medicine to unwilling patients. And it was a good day. The man roped better and he handled his slack better, and it was easier on the horse than it had been before. Tuck was unsaddled and eating grain when Con caught the paint and led him into the barn. He didn't tie the paint at all. He kept him in hand while he curried Tuck. Then he curried the paint as well and chucked pads and saddle on him. This was a change for the paint horse, but the man's confidence and steady ease of motion were infectious. With no fanfare, the man led the horse out of the barn. He traded halter for headstall. He tightened his cinches, and after twice around both directions, he was on the horse's back and gone. The horse never put up one protest as they left headquarters, and they trotted out into the big empty hay fields, and they trotted and loped figure eights until the horse was sweaty. And the man took him back in, stopping and doing circles. The horse respected the man's feet more than his hands. So the man tried to keep this in mind. Ride with your feet. They went back to and past the calving barn and out among the heifers in the man's care. And at a walk, they went back to the barn. Once inside, the man swapped headstall for halter and gave the young horse a big scoop of oats. Unhurried and efficient, he pulled his saddle and pads. Then he curried the damp horse deliberately and turned him out.
And that was Green Appaloosa, Topher Dalrymple, Devin Alves here in the studio with us. And love to hear one more if you got one for us, guys.
Yeah, we'll just... we'll do one off the cuff. Is the meter running right now?
Yep. So this is improv, right? You're just going to wing it on this one?
Yeah, we'll
kind of. All right, good. I'm not scared. I think it's going to work out.
Come on, Topher.
Find one in there.
Yeah,
there's a lot of writing in there. How many years of poetry are in that
this
notebook?
Is 3 months.
3 months? Oh, wow. My God.
Not many years at all.
Yeah. Do you have just piles and piles of those?
Oh, I
Do
have just notebooks.
You're not into typing it on a laptop. That's
What's
good.
A laptop?
What's typing?
Yeah, right. I will try and find something.
You ever see a movie where there's a crazy guy and he's like in his basement with a bunch of like pictures like on his desk and everything and like little strings tying all the pictures together?
A Beautiful Mind?
Well, a lot of movies, that's kind of Topher. His whole life is just pasted and plastered with scribblings.
Making connections. Yep.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Off the cuff. Fear is the exact opposite of happiness. Fear will stop a body from moving and a brain from working. Fear will get you hurt. Fear turns to violence and stupidity if you let it. The man wasn't afraid of the paint horse. The man was afraid of living in town. He'd been cut the paint horse, and the paint horse was scared of leaving the corral. Comfort and no work, and his buddies lived in the corral. The man hadn't been afraid of him when the paint had come over on top of him. And the man had to make that choice so that his mind and his body would still react with a horseman's sense of survival. If a man got afraid of one horse, he was on his way to being afraid of them all. And cowboys, real cowboys, ride horses every day. Get scared, move back to town, lose your right to wear a good-looking hat. So once the paint horse was saddled and warmed up, the man was on him and gone. Think, use your feet, not your hands. Take all the pressure off when he does the right thing. Think, be ahead of the motion with all you have. Don't be mean, just ride him honest. They went out and away from the barn and into the big hay pasture north of headquarters. The horse was getting better at standing still for mounting, but still wasn't good. But the man didn't really care right now. He wanted him sweaty. So they loped down the fence slowly, about 30 yards away from it, using it as a line to keep true. The horse hopped, irrigation ditches controlled and gentle. He did squirm and try to turn back often, but the man was getting his seat and his riding legs and his feel back more each day. And soon the horse learned that if he just went straight and stayed between the man's big gentle hands and between his feet, then life was good. And that day, the horse became a better horse. The man became a better man. And this small spot in a big, wide, wild country became a better place.